What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy, did you know that in Colorado today we reached a dubious record?
Oh, yeah? What was the record?
We topped $4 a gallon, the highest ever in the state.
For milk?
No, for gas. And if we're at four, you got to figure that California's at least five.
Yeah.
And diesel, for some reason, is even a dollar more than that.
So are we going to get to the point where a gallon of gas is more than a gallon of milk?
We're there.
Already?
Yeah, we're there, for
sure. Well, but we're not quite at, like, Whole Foods, double organic, vitamin D-infused milk levels yet.
No, that's a ways away. But in this video / podcast, we're going to be talking about the most fuel-efficient cars, maybe even the least fuel-efficient cars you can buy. So if you're out there and you're looking to maybe upgrade to a more economical vehicle, then we're going to tell you which ones those are. And Jay has put together not just that list, isn't that right, but the ones that are fun to drive, Jay.
Oh, yeah. We got a complete list of cars that are actually fuel efficient and you want to be seen in. You'll have a good time driving.
So this is going to be a short podcast because I have the answer right now.
Miata?
Nope.
Okay, what's the answer?
Okay. No, there's only one correct answer to this question. The Toyota Prius.
We knew that was coming.
Actually, you know, it's funny. So I'm glad you brought that up, Tom, because Jay, you may not believe this, but I couldn't agree more with Tommy. We had the Prius here, like a month ago, maybe 2 months ago?
Yep.
Okay.
And, you know, the Prius has, let's face it, gentlemen, the Prius has gotten a reputation for being the poster child for no fun toaster to drive that's very fuel efficient, right?
That's absolutely true.
Right? It's like what taxi cab drivers use in a lot of places. But I like the Prius. Actually, I was really impressed by it, Tommy. Not only was it fun to drive, but there's an all-wheel drive version, which you can actually use in the winter.
I just had this big argument. I've actually had this argument now, like, three or four press trips in a row. So we go on these press trips, and then all the journalists have these dinners together, right? And you talk about cars, because that's what you do. And I somehow always get on the topic of how much I genuinely love the Toyota Prius, and then everyone laughs at me and makes fun of me and says I'm a tall, skinny nerd, which is true. But I legitimately think the Prius is one of the best new cars you can buy on the market because it is extremely comfortable, very roomy, quite affordable, and the amount of stuff you get for your money is off the charts. The one we had was a nightshade edition. It was like low $30,000 range, but it had good lane centering, adaptive cruise control, wireless charging, heated seats. It had fantastic Apple CarPlay. It was super roomy. The seats folded all the way down. You put your bike and the dog and everything in the back. It was wonderful.
Yeah, all of the safety equipment.
And I drove the bejesus out of that car, driving it up a mountain, literally up a mountain from 5,000 to 12,000 feet. On the way back down, I measured the fuel economy on the way up and down. 52, 53 mpg.
Wow, that's officially, Toyota has it, or the EPA rather, has it rated at 58 city, 53 highway.
I hit the highway number.
There you go.
Driving up and down a mountain in Colorado's winter. It was a truly phenomenal car. Granted, it's not cool. There's nothing like very trendy now about driving a Prius, and certainly, like you said, it does have a little bit of a reputation for being the go-to Uber car. But if you want a car that will last you a million years, get you 50 miles per gallon, and hold all your stuff and friends while doing it, the Prius is the way forward.
Yeah, so, you know, Prius invented the hybrid synergy drive, right? That's Toyota's terminology for combining electricity and gasoline.
Well, it's interesting. So we used to own one of the cars we'll talk about on the list, probably. Yeah. I'm hoping it's on here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the first-gen Honda Insight.
Yes.
And the Insight beat the Prius to the market
by like 6 months
in the U.S.
Yeah.
But I want to say in Japan, the Prius beat the Insight. Because remember, there was a generation of Prius we never got here in the States. It was a Japanese-only thing. But we're talking like mid to late 90s was the introduction of the hybrid synergy drive system. And ever since then, it's been slowly and slowly and slowly evolving. And now you can buy a big, comfy car that'll get over 50 miles to the gallon, which is incredible.
So, you know, the problem with the Prius is it just went through that kind of boom and bust cycle, right? So when it first came out, people were like, that's a weird little car. And then fuel prices got very expensive. Yep. Your mom bought one during that time, right? And the Prius just exploded, and Toyota was like, hey, this, we've got something here. We've got a, you know, tiger by the tail. So let's not just create one car, let's create a sub-brand called Prius, right? So then the Prius C came out, mm-hmm. right? There was the big, tall, what was that one called, the big Prius, Tommy?
The Prius V.
The Prius V, yeah. And it became almost like overexposed, and it became too popular. You know, there's this kind of the saying, what, you know, burns red hot kind of dies quickly as well. And it just became too popular too fast, and then it became a poster child for like all that's wrong with the car industry, right? Where you're building toasters that are fuel efficient but are no fun to drive and have no, as Nathan would say, lead in the pencil.
Well, you were not driving them right. So I just had this big conversation with Sofian Bey, my buddy at Redline Reviews.
Yeah.
You can have a lot of fun in a Prius, but you got to change your mindset. It's not about acceleration and performance and cornering. It's about playing with the energy monitor, maximizing the coast, maximizing the time on battery, minimizing the time on gasoline. And if you look at it like that, you're never going to get a speeding ticket. And you also kind of have like a little fun game you can play with yourself. Dare I say
this, gentlemen?
Let's go ahead.
I think.
Why do you keep going with the gentleman?
It's
kind of creeping me out here, Dad.
Shall I say that? Hey, you guys. Shall I say this, guys?
Well, it's just
okay.
Like
social media guys.
It's just very formal to be hearing your dad call you a gentleman.
Well, you are. You're no longer 12.
I am still 12 in spirit and heart here, Dad.
Okay, guys.
I've got a point, yeah.
My voice hasn't dropped since I'm 12. And then to be called gentleman, woo.
Okay, guys. I'll go with that.
I'm not asking for dudes.
You want me you all? You want to do the southern thing?
Sure, y'all? We can do y'all.
That's all right,
y'all.
We'll go with y'all.
Y'all, fine. That's of course a y'all, not y'all.
I feel like
y'all.
I'm at the Kentucky Derby over here.
Could I say y'all?
No, with the gentleman.
All right, it doesn't matter. Here's the thing. Maybe with gas prices going through the roof, the Prius will have a renaissance. Maybe people will go back and discover all of the fun things that the Prius is and forget about all of that baggage that it's created over the last 20 years.
Do you remember when, like, in 2004, everybody in the social celebrity spheres had to buy one? Remember everybody
you wore your greenness on your sleeve. You had a Prius, yeah.
It was the one
Larry David had one, right? In Curb Your Enthusiasm. There was a whole thing where people would, like, wave to each other.
Yes, I know. But then, mm-hmm. And then celebrities had them. And then you had this weird dichotomy where you had some celebrities and Priuses and other ones in excursions and Escalades.
Exactly.
And there was this kind of this like interesting little social dynamic. And then Priuses, I think, became really popular with the folks that cared about the environment. And now those folks have left the Prius and have now all bought Leafs.
All right, hold on. Let me do some math. Well, we'll get to electric cars. Don't jump the gun here. Let me do some math while we're here, okay? So let's say that you're averaging 50. How much? What's the Prius official EPA? 54 or something like that?
The Prius?
Yeah.
It depends on the model.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, let me do some math.
But just say 54. I think that's a good
number. Yeah, that's about right.
All right, so 54. And let's say it's got a 10-gallon tank. I think that's – I know you have to use a calculator for that, right?
I think it's like 12.
All right, let's go 12, okay? Yeah. So 12 times 54 equals 648 miles of range on one tank.
Yeah, they go a long way.
648. That is astounding.
Yeah.
So let's see how much that cost in real dollars here in Colorado. So let me clear it. 12 times, and the record is $4.01. So you're going to pay $48 mm-hmm. just under $50, to go 650 miles.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're looking for, you know, something to help you fight, and you don't have to get a new one, right? You can go out
easily.
There,
you can buy a secondhand.
Yeah, they built millions of these at this point.
Plenty of them available.
I want to say last time I checked, it was well in the millions, and so they're out there. There's what, four generations now.
So I'm going to show you something really cool here.
Okay.
If you go to fueleconomy.gov, which is the official government website for fuel economy numbers, something that not a lot of people know is, of course, you compare side by side, which is what I do constantly at this job. But my favorite thing to do is to actually – they give you the listed range. So let me go ahead and find the right model here.
Okay.
So 2022 Toyota Prius.
Yeah.
I think the LE is the most efficient.
Yes.
Or maybe it's called the Eco. It's been a little while since I've done the Prius. So there's a bunch of different Priuses. There's a Prius all-wheel drive, and a Prius Eco. So let's go ahead and check out the Eco. So if you get the Eco, it's 56 combined, 53 city, 58 highway, and the EPA says 633 miles of range.
Yeah, wow. So my numbers were pretty close.
Yeah, they were pretty close.
So you'll spend $50 right now to go 650 miles.
11.3 gallon tank.
I would bet.
And that's at $4 a gallon, you're saying.
Yeah.
That's still not bad.
I would wager that that's probably less money than a Leaf. Electric cars are hard. You can't pin them down. And I'll give you a couple of rules of thumb, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are just – so in America, we have a very decentralized grid. And so there are utilities that work across different states, across different cities, across different counties, right? So you can't just say like the cost of gas or the cost of electricity is $4 in Colorado, whereas it's $6 in California. It doesn't work that way, right? It depends what utility you're using, what time of day you're filling up, right? So it's hard to do an apples-to-apples comparison. But there are some pretty good constants. First one, when you're public charging guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much very similar to the cost of gasoline in terms of how much you're paying to get the same amount of range. Now, I'm not going to do a kilowatt versus, because that's a very hard number to do as well. But let's start with this basic number. What is the MPGE of the Leaf?
Well, it's going to be higher.
Yeah, but let's get that number.
Because electric cars are much more efficient.
So that's MPGE stands for miles per gallon equivalent.
Here's the thing, though, Dad.
Let's just get that number out there. Because you said the Leaf, right? You said all the people who are driving the Prius are now driving the Leaf.
Well, not everybody.
But you know what I mean. It's the same kind of, like they switched to the Leaf. And let's also be, you know, fair to the Leaf. It was the first mass-produced electric car.
So I'm looking at the 22...
Affordable.
22 Nissan Leaf, 62 kilowatt-hour battery pack, 215 miles of total range, and 104 MPGE.
Wow, so double a Prius.
But here's the thing. What if I told you don't have to do any math?
Okay.
Let the government do the math for you.
Okay.
Because if you look at the compare side-by-side on fueleconomy.gov, they have this little feature here that's based on you save or
brilliant.
You spend.
That's brilliant.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah. And they base it off average vehicle consumption in 2022, which is apparently 27. And then it's even based off of, according to the website, 15,000 miles and current fuel prices.
Okay.
So here's where things get interesting. According to this little comparison chart, if you buy a new Prius Eco, you save $6,250 in fuel cost over 5 years compared to the average new vehicle.
Okay.
If you buy the Nissan Leaf, 62 kilowatt hour battery, you save $8,750 in fuel cost over 5 years compared to the average new vehicle. But they get even more exciting. They break it down on cost to drive 25 miles.
Okay.
So according to this fueleconomy.gov website, the Prius is going to cost you $1.93 at current fuel prices to drive 25 miles. The Leaf is going to cost you $1.05. So it's a little bit more affordable.
So if I'm reading those numbers right, the Leaf is going to be about 20% more cost efficient in terms of energy use that you have to pay out of your pocket.
But I think you brought it up. You brought up an excellent point. A hugely important point. It really depends greatly on how you charge it up. If you live in a city and an apartment and you have to rely on public DC fast charging like Electrify America to charge up your Leaf, it's going to be expensive. You're going to have a pretty bad experience. I hate to say it overall. And you're just not going to enjoy the car. If you live in a suburban environment and you have a place where you can charge it up in your garage, it's going to be extremely affordable. Very easy. And for most folks with average commutes, you're never going to think about the fast charging network.
All right, so let's do this, guys. So now that we've got that, let's compare those two cars, if possible, to the most popular car in America, which happens to be, drumroll, the RAV4.
Hybrid or standard?
The RAV4 sells almost 400,000 units. It actually surpassed the Accord and the Camry as the most popular vehicle. So I would just go with standard. I mean, can we do a comparison with the standard one?
Sure. I'll do RAV4 all-wheel drive, and then I'll do a hybrid.
And of course, there's a hybrid and there's a prime, but I like to deal in vehicles today, especially that are gettable, right? And let's face it, the prime is unobtainium.
Well, so I mean, the issue is a lot of these cars we're talking about today are going
to I think you can buy a RAV4. You could probably go to a Toyota dealership and get a RAV4.
I think you might even struggle. But
actually, I know a guy who's on a wait list for a hybrid.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying a RAV, just a regular RAV4.
Yeah.
The hybrid might be harder, but let's just compare those numbers to a regular RAV4.
I want to do a hybrid, too. I think it's going to be interesting.
All right. Do it. And let's compare them. Let's see how much money you'd save over the cost of a year. Because as much as, you know, we may like the Prius or we may like the Leaf, the fact is most Americans now are buying crossovers.
Exactly.
Okay. So I've got all-wheel drive to all-wheel drive.
Okay.
I just chose the all-wheel drive RAV4 because here in Colorado everybody buys them. So the gasoline all-wheel drive RAV4 with the 2.5-liter four-cylinder automatic and 8-speed looks like 29 mpg combined on that model. 420 miles of total range, and you save $750 in fuel cost over 5 years compared to the average new vehicle. And that means that the cost to drive 25 miles on the RAV4 gas is $3.73.
Wow, so triple that of a Prius or a Leaf.
Yes, and then I've got the hybrid.
Wow, that's
just to go up from a standard car to a crossover. There
so
it is.
The hybrid all-wheel drive is rated at 40 in the RAV4. So 29 on the gas to 40, okay? On the gas model, you save 750 over 4 years. On the 5 years. On the hybrid, you save 4,000.
But how much does it cost to drive it a mile?
No, 25 miles.
25 miles, sorry.
$2.71.
Double, more than double.
Yep.
Wow, so now you're doubling your...
Well, it's not quite double because the Prius is $1.93.
Okay, and how much was the Leaf?
A dollar.
So basically, by going from electric to hybrid to crossover, you're adding a dollar every one of those.
Yeah, that's a great...
Per 25 miles. I'm just...
More or less.
That's about right,
I'm trying to simplify.
Within a few cents here.
More or less.
Which is, you know, when you... So multiply that by 12,000, which is the average number of miles that a person drives a year, usually.
Well...
Right, and then you're getting a much bigger number.
Well, it's 25 miles, not every mile. So 12,000 divided by 25.
Right, is how much?
480.
Okay.
But they do the math for you.
Okay.
So, annual fuel cost.
Right.
This is based off of 15,000 miles driven every year.
So they're going 15, wow.
So, the Prius, 1,150.
Yeah.
The Leaf, 650.
Yeah.
The standard RAV4, 2,250. The RAV4 Hybrid, 1,600.
And then if you're really geeky, you could put that all in a spreadsheet and you can figure out where your break-even point is, right?
Yes,
right.
Sure. Exactly. And that's based on 45% highway, 55% driving, 15,000 annual miles, and current fuel prices. There you go. So that very cool website. If you've never done the compare side-by-side on fueleconomy.gov, it'll change your world.
Yeah, that is a very powerful analytical tool.
Okay. Well, should we start talking about some of the interesting... choices that Jay has lined up for us?
Exactly.
I know you don't want to focus on EVs, right? This is going to be more
We'll talk about EVs eventually because I think we need to talk about EVs, but I don't want to make this all about EVs because that sound you're hearing is people changing to Spike's podcast.
All right.
And I like Spike.
So, Jay.
Yeah.
What are some of the cars you have lined up for us?
Well, the first one is the one we're looking at right now.
So these are going to be fun to drive.
Exactly.
Fuel efficient vehicles.
Exactly. And some people may not even realize that these cars are shockingly very fuel efficient.
Right.
Especially on the highway. And right here, the Mazda Miata MX-5, specifically the Club trim. It gets 25 miles per gallon in this city. I'm sorry. Yeah, 25 miles per gallon in the city, 42 highway, and a combined 34.
So let's plug that into your little thing there. Let's just put it in there. I'm just curious. Shall we compare it? Can you add one more, or is that too many?
That's too many. You got to delete something.
Well, let's delete the Leaf. Get rid of
it. Compare it to the Prius.
Okay.
Yeah, let's compare it to the Prius because we don't want to mix electric and ICE.
Keep in mind, we've been using the Prius Eco.
Look, here's obviously, you know, I hate saying obvious things, but as much as I like the Miata, it's a two-seater.
It's a toy.
It's a toy. It's a
fun car.
It's a fun car, but if you're looking to, like, save, I guess if you were very wealthy and you could afford a third car, then this would be the one you might want to drive to work and feel good about driving it because you're getting good fuel economy. But let's face it, you're not going to put the kids in it. You may put one dog in it. Maybe you're significant other, but it's not going to be a practical car.
You can't even get it like a decent-sized suitcase in the truck. But don't worry, I have another two vehicles on this list that solves those problems.
Did you figure it out, Tommy? Are you at the Miata yet? Are you picking which one? Are you picking the Club Sport? Which one are you going for?
It doesn't go that far, but it doesn't make a lot of sense either, the results I'm getting.
Uh-oh. We found a problem with fueleconomy.gov. Yeah, all right, Jay, keep going.
For some reason, the Miata's thrown it all off here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's the Miata just threw off the algorithm.
You're confused.
You keep working at it.
Honda Civic Si.
Yeah, so what's the fuel economy on the Honda Civic Si?
I was surprised at this one. 21 in the city, 44 on the highway, and a combined 32.
That's because it's only a manual, which is also
exactly, which is like, I mean, it's a family car.
Yeah,
it's bigger than the previous generation. It is front wheel drive only. So, I mean, if you live here in Colorado, that may not be the best choice because all wheel drive is very popular. But still,
on the plus side, the Civic Si. Or any Civic has gotten big, right? It's like an Accord from days
10
of
years ago,
yore.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes. So it's big, it's roomy. You know, it's a classic, when I was a kid, big, full-size sedan, which today is weird.
It's considered a compact.
So, Jay, you know my first car was a Honda CVCC, this little tiny Honda that eventually became the Civic. Right, you could probably fit three of those.
Like a little hatchback type of thing?
Yeah, a little hatchback. Yeah. You could probably line up three of them.
Probably.
Or but at least definitely two.
But for in 2022, that the Honda Civic Si, you're going to do okay on fuel economy.
And what's the combined number on that?
The Civic Si is 32.
Okay. So I did find a Civic. It's kind of tricky in the mobile app. I should have brought my computer here. But I'm looking at a Civic. I don't know if this is the Si or just a sport model, but it's right around 31 combined, 384 miles of total range, and that's going to cost you $2,100 a year to keep fueled up at current prices. I really actually do quite like the Civic Si a lot. The new one is certainly a little bit more conservative in the styling department than the old one, but they've really upped the interior quality and the interior design, and that is one of the best parts about the new Civic. And it's got Honda Sensing, which is their full suite of autonomy features, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, and then other good news is if you're like a fan of Acura, there's going to be an Integra.
Yeah, right, exactly, which is the same car.
Which is the same car at the local dealership.
Don't tell Acura that. They won't like it.
Well, it is the same car.
It's
always been the same. It's not like it's the same car. Back in the day when the Integra first came out, it was always based on a Civic.
I do think that the Civic Si is a little bit expensive for the power output. I think they should have probably, from an enthusiast standpoint, given it just a little bit more horsepower for the dollar. That would be kind of my one complaint about it. And I'm still not convinced that the rev hang thing is fixed over the previous generation. So these have this weird thing where when you go to shift between gears, you push it on the clutch, and it takes a long time for the revs to decay, which can make it kind of tricky to go from gear to gear. But it's practical. It looks quite nice. I do like some of the color options as well. The seats are very supportive. And I think that this is a winner, Jay. So I'm not totally on board with the MX-5 just because it is a little bit small and cramped. But right. I will give a big nod to the Civic Si.
My issue with the Civic Si is an interesting one, I think. And that is, you know, when I was growing up, Tommy, if you wanted a fuel-efficient car, you would get a manual. But now that's been put on its head, right? Because automatics, specifically CVTs, if you count those as automatics, are much more fuel efficient than manual cars. And in fact, manual cars are now some of the least efficient cars, which is weird because, like I said, when I was growing up, I felt like real special because I was like, hey, I know how to drive a manual. So not only am I special, but I'm saving fuel. And now, of course, it's the opposite way.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't.
But I am still special, Tom.
And you don't like CVTs.
No, I hate CVTs.
You have made those very clear in the past.
Sure. Yeah, no, they're no fun.
But this is a good choice, Jay. I think that the Civic Si is a great car for folks that want to maybe do an autocross, maybe go have some fun in the canyons, and still be able to hold friends and family.
And it's affordable.
And it looks quite good. I think the new design is quite nice.
Okay.
Although I will say, If you look at a 1987 Honda CRX HF, fuel economy is way higher on that.
All right. All right. Can I do a little palate cleansing right now?
Sure.
A Roman rant. Do you mind, Tommy? I just want to kind of talk to the enthusiast out there, because we've been doing a lot of cars that, if you're an enthusiast, you might find, shall we say, a little mundane, maybe even boring, right? So I'm going to do a little bit of a rant, and I'm going to give you the history of this rant. I'm going to give you the reason for it, all right? So I think that because of YouTube, dare I say it, automakers have now started to build, these are very specific cars, right? Sports cars that are no longer fun to drive. Because what's happened is they've made them too much like race cars. They've made them too track focused. And I'll give you a couple examples of that, okay? And I'll tie it back into YouTube. So once upon a time, if you wanted a sports car, the manufacturers realized that you took all the best attributes of a race car, a track car, but you kind of detuned it, right? You made it less loud. You made it, you know, less harsh to drive, right? You made it more fun, because most people didn't want the hard edge that race cars have. But that has changed. And I'll give you two examples of three examples. The first one that really did change that, probably as a brand, was McLaren, right? So McLaren just basically took a race car and put it on the road. And to me, when you get into a McLaren, it just feels like a racehorse, right? It just wants to go, but it's nervous, it's twitchy, and ultimately it's not a lot of fun to drive. Then the next manufacturer that took that model to heart was Ford with the GT, right? The Ford mm-hmm. GT is uncomfortable. It's tight. There's no room in the foot box. It's all the things that a race car would be, right? All the compromises that you would do in a race car. Then recently I drove two cars that are as ballsy race cars as you can get on the road. The Huracan STO, which is basically a Lamborghini's race car for the road. And that one is crazy, because not only is it not fun, I think, to drive on the road, I only drove it on the track, but because it's so loud, it exceeds 130 decibels, it's actually illegal to drive it on many tracks.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's a race car for the road where it's legal to drive, but on the track it's actually illegal. And then probably the most interesting one, which was the one that everybody loves, it's the new Porsche GT4 RS, right? Me and Tom, we were having a conversation about this, and what they did was they put the air intake literally like 4 inches behind your head. So when you're driving it, you hear like this incredibly loud. And when I say loud, I mean not like to 11, I know it's a cliche, but to like 20 air intake. And if you love the sound of a Porsche, a Boxer, which I don't necessarily love. I love the V8. I love like the Harley sound. I love that kind of heartbeat sound. The Porsche just sounds
amazing.
Well, you love it, right?
It's the word you're looking for.
Yeah. No, I don't. No, it's like screaming. It's air intake, and you know the car is so track focused, right? All it's missing is a roll bar. You get it on the road, and it just beats you up, right? It's loud. It's uncompromising. And I think the reason that the manufacturers have gone down this route is because YouTubers found out that the cars that are the most popular on their channels are the craziest cars, right? So 10 years ago when we first, or 12 years ago when we first started doing YouTube, people like Street Speed and Shmee and who else does this, Vehicle Virgins, started profiling all these crazy, either from the factory, but mainly built up hyper and supercars, right? And they would put these crazy exhausts. And I think the manufacturers started watching those videos and noticed just how popular they were. And then they started building those cars for people to actually buy. And when you get behind the wheel of one of those, you kind of realize the difference between a movie car, which is cool and fun when you're watching it as a video, and a real car, which when you translate that to actually having to drive it on a daily basis, is absolutely no fun to drive.
So I believe it or not, for once, I agree with you like 85% of the way. Wow, on a podcast. I think that's part of the issue. Is the performance envelope has gotten so high that to enjoy these cars, you have to be on a track or in a closed environment where you can push them. because to have fun in a GTRS, GT4 RS, or GT3, or, you know, any of the GT Porsches, you really nowadays have to be going so fast to really feel the dynamics of the car come to life. And even like standard cars like the Civic Si, right? This would run circles around an old CRX Si, but a CRX Si is going to be a lot more fun in the city and every day just because you're screeching those 115 profile tires at, like, you know, 30 miles an hour. I do enjoy having these halo cars. I think it is cool because what is smart and what these manufacturers know is that you get the GT4 RS to hang on your wall. That's the car you hang on your wall. But then one you really buy is a standard Cayman or a Cayman S or a GT4, one that you can enjoy on the road. So I'm glad that they exist. I think it's cool that you have the track option, but let's be honest, nobody's bought it. And I don't think it's a recent thing. Like, if you look at RS cars from the previous...
Like you're saying, like the Lamborghini Countach, which is also miserable to drive, would have been the same...
Yeah, but that was miserable on the track and miserable on the road. That was just miserable all the
really
time.
Cool,
it just looked really cool.
It was
Jay's right.
Miserable.
So that's what you're saying. It was still miserable. It just that one wasn't any good on the track.
I think Jay Leno drove on daily for years.
Did he?
Around around LA. Like, that was like,
wow.
He drove it from home to work.
Did he ever have to back it up?
Yeah, he probably had someone do it for him, maybe. No, that's a bad example because that was just
that's an outlier.
In my opinion. Yeah. Right. But all of these, like, anytime you see the word lightweight next to a car or RS or competition, these are the stripped down track versions. So I really do appreciate that it exists.
You know what a good analogy might be? Like the Cuda.
Like the Yanko or from the 60s.
No, the Shelbys. Those might be good. Like the Shelbys, right? The Shelby Cobras would be a good example of that, right?
I don't know what they were like on the road.
If you've ever been in a Shelby Cobra, right, you will burn the skin off your feet because of those side pipes.
Exactly. Oh, or just getting out, you'll burn the back of your legs.
Yes, that is a good example.
Right?
Yeah.
Dodge Viper 2,
you know
the original.
What I mean? It looks cool, but if you ever had to live with one of them, you'd want to take, you know, a gun to your head because they're just so uncompromising.
Yeah,
in what they represent, but you know those are always kind of outliers, right? Porsche.
GT4 RS is going to be an outlier. That's going to be $100,000 markup
the old Porsches, right? The old RSs. This isn't the first RS. They were actually drivable on the road. These cars, to me, are just so track focused, and you're right, they are really good track cars. But I think maybe Porsche realizes that because of the world we're living in today, nobody's ever going to drive it on the road. In fact, nobody's ever going to drive this thing, right? Because it's so valuable. If you get an allocation for it, you'll buy it, you'll put it into your garage. And Tommy, we have some friends with 4 GTs, and as I'm aware, they don't drive them. They take them out like once a year. And you know, they say because if you put miles on a 4GT, right, it lowers the value. I think it's because they're just no fun to drive on the road.
Or both,
yeah.
It's a little different, though, Dad, because I think back in the day, there were really stripped-down track-going versions that people didn't like to drive every day. But they were done for race homologations, because that was a big deal, be it rally, be it for touring car, right? You did have these really, really, really hardcore, crazy, low-volume vehicles. So I'm not sure that has changed that much, but I do really think what has changed is due to the increase in suspension design and the width of tires and the compound of tires and the switch to bigger brakes is that to enjoy some of these sports cars, even like a standard Cayman, right, on a back road, you're going to have to be really pushing the bounds of going to jail in some cases on the speed. Whereas in my classic Mini, I can have a ton of fun at 39 miles an hour.
I completely agree with that argument, but I'm actually making a little bit different argument.
You want more boring cars.
No.
You want the...
No. I'm saying, Tom, I'm saying you get into a Huracan STO or a GT4 RS and you go drive at legal speeds in the canyon, you're going to be miserable in that thing.
Well,
or a 4G. Not because you're not pushing it, just because it's so freaking hard-edged that it's just no fun to drive, right? There's no comfort in the thing.
Yeah, but if you can afford it...
I mean, to be a race car driver, right, it's a hard job, right? You've got this engine screaming, you're concentrating. This is not something that most guys are doing because it's you know, a Sunday afternoon drive in the mountains. I mean, these guys are working hard, and these cars make you work hard even when you don't want to work hard because they're just so hard-edged.
Yeah, but that's the point. They're track cars. They're track cars. Every R is...
I don't want that. Why
well, then
would
don't
I ever
buy
want
it.
That?
Then buy a normal Cayman. There you go. There's a solution. Problem solved.
I'm saying, why are manufacturers now building race cars for the road?
Well, it's not just...
It makes no sense. Not sports cars, race cars for the road.
But that's not a new thing, Dad. Track day cars have been around for a long time.
No. I think I don't want to get too argumentative, but look, the cool thing about Porsche, right? Any Porsche, Cayman, is you can take it on the track and run it all day long, and it, you know, you could take that 911, right, and hit red line after red line after red line, and then drive it home, and it'll work in both of those worlds. You'll be very comfortable as a daily driver in a 911, and you'll be very happy with it on the track.
You're making some dangerous assumptions, though, that that's always been every Porsche, because it just has not been.
I'm saying the 911. I just said
right.
You can take the 911 and you can daily it,
or, but not every 911.
Or you can take it to the track on the weekend, right? And you're going to have a car that will perform exceptionally well. So there's a spectrum there, right? Where the road is 1 and the track is 10, and that car falls somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But now these new cars are always at 10.
They're not always at 10.
If it's
a track car, it's going to be at 10. Here's the thing, and this I just listened to a really smart Porsche expert talk about this.
Yeah.
If it had the word RS behind it, it was always miserable on the road. Always. This is not just a 2022 thing. The older 911 GT3 RS is miserable on the road. But that's a great thing, right? The RS is a car for someone that has a lot of money that wants to be the fastest on the track. That's someone that wants the ultimate expression of that car on the track. It's not a daily driver. Porsche has never marketed it as a daily driver. They've never said...
So why not just throw a robot? Roll
because it's
in it.
It's cool having it. But that's... Hold up. Some of the old factory Porsches, and maybe even today, I don't know, had roll bars in them.
Just throw a roll cage
well,
in it.
That's
take,
great.
Take out all the sound deepening. Get rid of all the... because the,
that's what they did on the GT4 RS.
I've been in the RS. It still has, you know, a radio and an air conditioner, right? Why do you have all that stuff? If it's a pure race car, just get rid of it.
Great.
You know why? Because they would never sell it.
Exactly, because you need to keep it road legal to make it appeal.
No, an air conditioner doesn't make it unroad legal. It just
add weight.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying the road legal thing is cool. People like the idea that they can road legal. It's technically the fastest version of the car is road legal. But it's never been marketed. I mean, Porsche has done models without radios. Porsche has done models without air conditioning.
Yes, you can get a lightweight version of a 911 right now where you get less. It's actually the fastest 911 you can buy.
Right.
You pay $10,000 and you lose the rear seats. You get a carbon fiber roof. And I think you lose 80 pounds.
Sure.
Okay. But I'm saying if you're going to build a track car, then build a track car. Don't put a radio in it. Don't put an air conditioner in it.
Sure.
Don't put like all the, because the GT4 RS, as well as the Huracan STO, right, they still have all the creature comforts that you would expect in a road-going car.
So you're saying they're too soft. You want them to be even more.
I'm saying if you're going to build a race car for the road, just make it a race car.
Just go all the way.
And the reason they don't do that is because nobody would buy it. So what they're selling is a car that ostensibly people think, this is the hardest-edged Porsche I can buy for the track, but yet it's got all the creature comforts that I can drive it on the road. And what I'm saying is you can't.
Sure.
Don't pretend you can't. You will not be happy in that car on the road.
Yeah, but I think people won't care.
Maybe you will be happy driving it once a month, the Cars and Coffee.
I mean,
you'll be able to live with that.
I hate to say that. If you look at the allocation cost that it costs to get an allocation on a GT3, people are disagreeing with the sentiment by a big margin. I mean, a GT3 allocation now is $50,000 for a 911. GT4 is probably going to be $50,000 if you want an allocation.
I just got a spy photo, right, of the GT3 RS.
Yeah.
Did you see the wing on that thing?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's crazy.
It's huge. But people buy these cars because kind of like, you know, the 4 GTs, they buy them. They know exactly what it is they're getting.
Yeah.
They're not planning to keep them forever. They know they're going to go up
actually,
in value.
Actually, Jay, I don't think so. I think a lot of people don't know what they're getting. I think a lot of people are buying the thing because it's unobtainium. And that's the other problem, right? Today, a lot of people are buying these cars because they don't want to drive them. All they want to do is
it's an investment.
As a commodity, right?
Right,
they're
exactly.
They're just buying them because they know that they'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
That was my point. They know that what they're buying is a solid investment because there is a solid history with these cars.
Right.
With Porsches, with Ferraris, you name it, with these special edition like track cars.
Balls
for the
to
road.
The wall.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They know that this is going to increase in value actually very quickly.
And that is a depressing thought that people are just buying them to park it. But that's just kind of the reality.
That's what I said. The friends I know who have the GT, Ford GT, once a year.
And Ford was trying to prevent that very thing from happening
when
the GT, this generation GT was launching. Remember, there was that whole application process. You had to say...
So they were trying to keep people from flipping them, right?
Right, it was not just that, but they also wanted to have people to actually drive them, to take them to Cars and Coffee events on a regular basis, but they're not doing that.
I just don't want you to, because what it can come, I understand your point now, and I appreciate your point, but what I don't want the comments to all be is, Roman is complaining that the track car is bad when it's not on the track.
I'm saying
that's kind of what you're saying. The track car is the GT4S is ostensibly, to your point, it's built to be a Nürburgring killer, right? And it's built to be the ultimate purest Cayman GT4. And yes, it's going to be bad on the road because at some point, like the 911 has that really big bandwidth, right? But there are certainly cars more comfortable on the road, and there are certainly better on the track.
I mean, I could see Porsche saying, you know, we build a regular Cayman,
which they do,
right? So this is the hardest edged, most track focused. But there has been, I think, this recent, and I think it's been pushed out there by YouTube to make things very extreme. Where it gets to the point that they're almost...
I
shouldn't say undriveable, but they're just no fun to drive.
So can I give you a better example?
Yeah.
You are saying exactly things I agree with, but you chose the perfectly wrong car to make the point with.
All right.
A better example to that is the BMW M3 and M5, standard M3 and M5, because those have always been very, very, very drivable daily cars that are screamers under the hood. And if you look at the progression of the M3 and the M5, right?
Absolutely.
Throughout the years, they've always been very comfortable. But this latest generation of especially M3, even the standard one, is so harsh, so firm, so buttoned down that it's very difficult to daily drive.
And you're not even talking about the competition.
Oh, competition is like off the scales.
Yeah.
That's approaching RS.
So thank you. I'm just saying there's this trend to build these extremely track-focused cars.
Yep.
And I don't understand it because I think it's cool. It makes great advertorial and advertising copy. It makes for great YouTube videos. But what's keeping that market afloat, I think, is the value that the cars are attaining and not the fact that they're actually great cars. Because I'm sorry, but a race car for the road is a pretty bad car.
Well, let's be honest.
And with a bad driver, it's a very dangerous situation.
There's one really good example of a car that competed against another car, which was the go-to old guy car, and then died off.
What's that?
Let's see if you can figure it out.
Corvette?
So the Corvette is the car that is still sticking around. That's the car that was actually pretty comfortable on the road, that was actually very drivable, that old guys like. But what was the Corvette's competition that's no longer around?
Yeah, I'm stumped, dude.
Mm-hmm. I was just talking to someone about
how
this.
How old?
Manual only, discontinued a few years ago.
The Viper.
The Viper.
You're talking about the Viper.
The Viper.
Tommy,
Viper was too much of a compromise for the... I know you want to tell your story, but I just want to say this really quick. It was too much of a compromise for the consumer base. It was manual transmission only. You'd burn your leg getting in and out of it. It was dangerous. Didn't have traction control for years and years and years. It was just too stripped down and hardcore.
Can I just make this argument then?
What?
The Viper, and I've driven both of them, right? Mm-hmm. On the track and on the road. The Viper, when you compare it to like the Huracan STO,
yep,
would be like comparing the Huracan STO to an old-fashioned Coupe de Ville.
Sure.
Sharper and how much more race folk. I mean, these are truly race cars, like in terms of their noise, in terms of their shifting, mm-hmm. right, in terms of their suspension compliance, right? You take those things on anything but a glass smooth track, and you're going to feel every pregnant aunt you run over.
Right.
And it's not going to be pleasant.
But here's the thing. With the Huracan, with the Cayman, there are other options. Right? If you don't want to feel every pregnant aunt, just get the standard Huracan. If you don't want your leg getting burned in a Viper, there was no Viper luxury. You'd always get your leg burned.
So let me finish. And I think Jay brought up a really good point. I'm saying that these cars would be marketplace duds if it wasn't for the fact that we're living in this really weird time now where people are buying them, not because they're good cars for what they are, but because they're very collectible and people, you know, want to collect them and because they appreciate them. So few people have actually driven these cars, right? This is the problem. Very few people drive these cars. It's like there's a handful of automotive journalists who have driven them.
And very few people who even know how to properly drive
And then there's
cars.
A handful of YouTubers who are never going to be like, hey, I bought the GT4 RS, and you know what? My girlfriend and my mom hate this thing, right?
And then they crashed it or something.
Yeah, they're never going to say that, right? They're going to be like, this is the best car ever. And all this hype is I think, not doing the car the service that it deserves. Look, on the track, there is nothing better than a GT4 RS or a Huracan STO or, you know, pick the race car. But on the road, they're just no fun. And I think that was my only point, that manufacturers have now decided that people want race cars for the road.
Although, let's be honest, Ed, this has been going on since the beginning of the car. You know, if you look at, like, what the cars that were hyped up in the 1980s, the supercars, if you look back at them, they were just garbage. Everybody, oh, my God, you got to go drive a Countach.
Yeah, they were garbage.
Or Ferrari 308 is just a phenomenal thing, right? And looking back at it, we're like, yeah, they were brilliant things to look at.
One more point.
Interiors made of cardboard, literally.
Yeah, one more point to Jay's point, and then we're going to have to get back to our fuel efficiency.
Yeah, exactly.
We've really gone off the track. One more point. The reason you can also do these cars today is because of all the technical nannies that allow you to actually drive these cars on the road. Because back in the day, you know, if you took a race car and put it on the road, you know, be it a NASCAR or a European performance car, unless you knew what you were doing, chances are the very first tree would be the very last tree.
Well, that was people don't realize this. Even like the Shelby Mustangs, the original ones, right?
Well, you don't have to go.
They were dangerous.
You don't have to go that far back to find a car like that. The Porsche Carrera GT.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Paul Walker.
Yeah. Right? And that guy driving it did know what he was doing, by the way, apparently, and he still ended up in a bad situation. So you don't have to go that far back. But, it's an interesting point.
But the technology has allowed now these cars that are very powerful.
Absolutely.
Very hardcore to actually, you know, stay on the road.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's keep going.
Okay.
Let's go back to our consumer.
Right. Back to the original bit. Now, this next one, very similar to the Miata, but if you get a few extra dollars, the BMW Z4.
No, sorry.
Yeah, this is the S-Drive 30.
Let's hear your reasoning there.
You know, it's one of these things. BMW, when this car came out, I was at the Paris Motor Show. I believe that's what it was when it debuted. And I was asking them, why did you do this? Their previous Z4 didn't sell. And they're like, listen, BMWs and Roadsters, we always have to have a Roadster. And there's still people out there who love BMW Roadsters.
Yes. So, first of all, huge fan of the Z3. Love the early Z4s. I don't like the new Z4. So, Sofyan wants one of these, actually, speaking of Redline reviews. He wants a Z4. We had one at the office. It was like 70 Gs. It had the little four-cylinder.
The German Supra?
Yeah, but it's just not a... I don't think it's a very good-looking car.
We'll get to that eventually.
The Japanese Supra?
In this generation of Z4, I'm just not sure it's that attractive. I didn't think it drove particularly well, and I just thought it was a lot of money for what you get. But what's the fuel economy? What's the combined?
See, that's what I wanted to get at. You were getting 20 in the city, 40 on the highway, and a combined 29.
So you say 40 on the highway?
Exactly.
Is that
for,
a typo?
No. But for the S-Drive 30.
Sure, the little one.
The less powerful one. So you're still hitting that 40 miles per gallon on the highway.
That's very impressive.
That's not... You know, that's not terrible, but it's the same problems as the Miata. It's a two-seater. It's just not a very
But you fit in this
driver.
One.
I do.
This one is actually pretty comfy.
But Roman fits in it.
Yeah, it's pretty comfy.
Actually, I would say the Supra, is also, going back to our previous conversation, a little hard-edged for a lot of people, and I think the sales numbers.
Yeah.
The only car that's not as hard-edged that's like, you know, an affordable modern-day sports car would be like the 86, right? That one is more traditional.
Or the Miata. Miata's pretty soft,
Miata's pretty soft. Yeah.
But here's the issue with your manufacturer. So say you build a car for the 99% of ways that 99% of people are going to make it. Like the Z has always, for a lot of cases, been like that, right? It's pretty cushy. Then you get all the automotive journalists saying, oh, it's not very firm and it rolls around in the corners. And so it's just no winning, right? They either build the car for the 99% of people it is comfortable. But then the 99% of people don't want to buy it because all the auto journalists said, oh, but it's too soft and rolls in the corners.
I was ready to buy a Z. I've owned three of them. Your grandpa's owned some.
Mm-hmm.
I think they hit the compromise just right. And then I sat and I didn't fit.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Same thing with the Supra. I don't fit. I mean,
but you fit in this?
I do fit in this.
That's better.
I just think it's such an outlier. This is like a fourth car.
At best.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this next one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great car ruined by the infotainment system. So Jay just put up the picture of the new Mark 8 Golf GTI.
Exactly.
The E888 four-cylinder is a lot of fun to drive. The chassis dynamics are fantastic. I think the front end is a little droopy. The interior quality is great. It's a pretty good value. But that infotainment system, I mean, it got to the point where when I was driving the Golf four-cylinder we had, we got so frustrated with it. It was stuck on some AM talk show from the 1970s. Mm-hmm. It played for 4 days straight.
So for all of you non-North Americans, let me explain something here. This is a great choice, and you may be wondering, I can hear people screaming at their iPod or wherever they're listening, or their iPhone.
Golf GTI, we should say. I don't even know if I said that.
Right. I'm just saying, I can hear a lot of people screaming, why would you not pick the diesel version of this? Why wouldn't you pick the diesel version of
this? Because it's been dead in the U.S. for 7 years.
Exactly. Yeah, we only get two versions of the Golf now. That's the GTI and the Golf R. Everything else in Europe, you get much smaller powertrains. You get diesel versions of it. Around the world, we get the GTI and we get the Golf R. Those are our only choices. Or if you want to go fuel efficient, then you got to go ID4. We don't even get the ID3.
I shouldn't be too harsh in the infotainment. You can figure it out. But the haptic controls, the lack of the volume knob.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's just not good. No. Yeah. In Europe, actually, this is a fun thing, too. If you look back at the generations of Golf, not only did they have a GTI, but they had a GTD, which was diesel version of the GTI.
Exactly.
And they also have a GTE, which is a plug-in hybrid sporty model.
All right, before you get to the next one, Jay, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How about your brand new personal car? Would that fit in this category? And tell them what it is and tell them the fuel economy.
Yeah, I bought a brand new Subaru Crosstrek Sport. And yes, Roman, it does have the dreaded CVT. But let me look up the exact fuel economy numbers.
But I bet you the fuel economy is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, actually it
phenomenal.
Is. Exactly.
Because you've got the smaller engine, right?
No. I got the bigger engine.
Oh, you got the bigger engine.
Which is the 2.5.
Ah.
But, this was very interesting is that the 2.5 engine and the 2.0, the standard engine, get roughly the same fuel economy.
So I know, isn't it weird?
I know.
And,
you're
and
getting
one makes more horsepower.
Oh, the 2.5.
Yeah, yours makes more horsepower.
I think it's rated at 182 horsepower.
Well, the issue is that you have to rev out the little four-cylinder, the smaller one, so much in order to maintain the same speed as the bigger engine.
And this is something we figured out when we had our Challenger Hellcat. Right? So sometimes the smaller engine doesn't mean it's more fuel efficient. So the crazy thing about the Challenger engine, of course, it put out 707 horsepower. Mm-hmm. And if you drove it around town, you'd be in the low 20. You'd be like 17.
On the highway, it would do 20.
No, on the highway, do 30. But
let's not get too optimistic.
Around town, it would do like 17.
I'm not sure I've ever seen 30 in that
car.
You
would do 30. If you were cranking along, that Hellcat power plant was like 1,500 RPM at 65 miles an hour, you would get 30. You would just...
I think we averaged like 23 on our trip to California.
I think we did like 27.
I don't think it was that good.
I think we did one fuel economy stop and we did 27. But around town, it was pretty terrifying. But... big engine, car that, just kind of moseys on down the road as long as you're not putting your foot into it, spinning up the supercharger. It actually wasn't horrible, and it may be something that you might want to keep in mind.
So
sometimes smaller engines don't mean better fuel economy.
Yeah, but that's a little bit of – I mean
– That's extreme. It's an outlier.
Yeah, that's extreme, and it's not always true because then with the big engine, of course, you're buying a Hellcat not for fuel economy because you want to hear it. So it was very – it was sort of efficient on the highway, but it was not very good in the city.
Do we get the numbers on this?
Yeah, so the Golf GTI 2022, four-cylinder, manual transmission, turbo, 28 combined, 24 city, 34 highway, and 370 miles of total range. That's going to cost you $2,300 in gasoline every year.
Yeah, not bad.
Good little car, fantastic powertrain, fantastic road dynamics. I would get the GTI over the Golf R. Actually, I think the GTI is like 85% of a Golf R, except, of course, minus all-wheel drive. But I just don't like that infotainment system very much.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Also a good family car.
Also a good family car, yeah.
It can do what you need it to do.
Any hatchback, right?
Yeah.
Any hatchback is going to always have... Those hatchbacks have this amazing ability. Like you go to IKEA and you buy some crazy, piece of furniture and you look at the box it comes in and you're like, this is never going to fit. And then you get it to your let's say, GTI, and you open up the back, and somehow mysteriously when you put the seats down and move the passenger seat forward, it all works. I don't know how that happens, but it works.
Exactly. Okay, next up, the BMW 330i xDrive. Now, official numbers, 19 city, 44 highway, and combined 29.
What do you think, Tommy? Are you enjoying the xDrive?
Yeah, it's good. They also do a plug-in hybrid version, but I would probably stick with the standard 2-liter. I think that this is a fantastic generation of 3 Series. It still has the normal-sized grills on the front of it, in case
for
you
now.
Notice. For now. I do like the new 3 Series quite a lot, actually. I mean, it's kind of got its thunder stolen by the Model 3, which is going to be a lot more efficient. But if you do want a fantastic driving generation of 3 Series, these new G-Bodies are really good.
Or get the i4, right?
If you
want to go, because it's basically a 3 Series that's all electric. So there's a new i4. There's the M40 and the M50, right? So there's the two-wheel drive and the all-wheel drive. And we just compared it. We did a video and drag raced it against a Tesla Model 3 performance. So head over to alltfl.com if you want to see that video where it's still up there.
Cool.
All right.
Do you want to keep going?
Jay, yep. What's next?
Next up, the Acura ILX. Now, bear in mind, everybody, this is being discontinued. 2022 is the final model year. What is replacing it, Tommy?
The Integra.
That's right. But for right now, you can still get it. They're still available. 18 in the city, 42 in the highway, and a combined 28 miles per gallon.
Pretty good.
Because it's being phased out, you probably get a decent deal on it right now. So 42 miles per gallon.
If you can find one. If you can find one. Look, I think the auto buying paradigm has completely changed. We are way past, like, I'm going to drive by my local Honda dealer, see if they have one. So, yes, you probably can get one, but you're going to have to go to, like, Auto Trader and do some digging and be prepared to, like, fly somewhere and drive it home, which is fine, which is great. I love doing that. There's nothing more fun than flying.
I did that when I bought my Crosstrek.
Yeah.
And that was okay.
Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. Was it fun cross-country tripping?
Except driving through one specific state that I won't mention. But other than that, it was a great, it was nothing like a little mini cross-country road trip. And I got to check out my new car at the same time.
Did you drive by way of Alaska?
No, I did not drive by way of Alaska.
So let me guess. So Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska are some of the states you would have passed through. Is one of those three the one you don't want to mention? Indiana, of course, is another one.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
One of those. It's there. I just don't want to offend any of our viewers here.
All right. What's next?
Next up is the Audi A4. Seriously, this one is pretty good. I was surprised.
What's the fuel economy?
We are, for the Premium Plus, 18 in the city, and again, 40 on the highway.
You seem to have
Sure it's 40? Dude, these numbers seem a little much.
You have a penchant for sedans.
18 in
the
city.
Well, the reason why I went with sedans is, again, these are cars that people can do multiple things with.
Are you looking at 2022?
Yes.
Okay.
These are cars that are not, again, they're not crossovers. They're fun to drive, and they're also good family cars.
All right, well, let's pick some crossovers, because I think that's where a lot of the excitement is right now. So hold up on your list. I'm going to give you a couple of crossovers that I would consider.
I think are fuel-efficient crossovers?
I think are relatively fuel-efficient, and I think are also fun to drive. Now, I would love to mention some of the Subaru crossovers, but Subaru doesn't loan us cars, so even though there is a new Forester, there's a new Outback or refreshed Outback, we have yet to drive them. We did try to make up with Subaru, try to bury the hatchet, but they decided.
So what are some of your favorite crossovers?
So do we want to go, how do you want to do this?
Well, I'm just going to point out a couple. So the RAV4 Prime is a ton of fun. It's the plug-in hybrid Toyota RAV4 to go like 40-something miles on a single charge.
I'm thinking much more fun than that.
Well, but it has to be efficient, and the RAV4 Prime is
I'll
efficient.
Give you one.
Okay.
The new Bronco with the small engine.
Not that efficient.
You think it's bad?
Yeah, it's not great.
No.
Especially now that we're...
2.3?
Yeah, with a 2.3.
Yeah, it's not horrible, but it's nothing I would shake a stick at. No, I mean, I think we got to give folks consumer advice for some very...
That's okay. It's just Jay's camera's died. So if you miss Jay...
Sorry about that, everyone. Right. I'm still here.
He's still here.
Some efficient examples, like hybridized. I think in terms of fun to drive, the RAV4 Prime is awesome. If you look at electric, Model Y... It's an absolute blast to cruise.
Tucson Hybrid.
Tucson Hybrid is not a whole lot of fun, though.
I like it. I like the style. I think it looks good.
I just drove the...
It's a good-looking car.
I just drove the sister car to that, the Sportage hybrid.
Yeah, the Kia. That's a plug-in hybrid, isn't it?
No, they have two. I didn't drive the plug-in. It's just a standard one. They have this weird thing where they have a turbo hybrid with the automatic.
Yeah.
It felt pretty slow.
Really?
I was actually really surprised.
All right, let me... Okay, if you don't like the Bronco, how about the Bronco Sport?
Yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah, I really like the Bronco Sport.
I think that's a fuel-efficient car. That is fun to drive. It's off-road worthy. It makes a statement. You know what I mean? It's not just another box on wheels. It's a good-looking, capably off-road, bad weather car.
I'd say the Kona EV, the fully electric Kona, a lot of fun to drive. A lot of torque steer, but it's a good car, and it's really pretty fast, over 200 miles of range.
All right, let me throw two others out there, see what you think.
Yep.
All right. The two Jeep 4xEs, the Wrangler 4xE and the Grand Cherokee 4xE. Now, these are plug-in hybrids. Both of them get about 20 miles on pure electric.
Yep.
And they're qualify for the $7,500 federal tax credit. Mm-hmm. And I think they're, very fuel efficient and fun to drive and express personality.
Yeah, I think they're good. They do have a lot going on in terms of combining.
So are you worried about reliability?
A little bit. I mean, it's definitely a concern of mine in the long run.
Okay.
I do like the issues with like the 4xEs. The Wrangler is, I think you get better fuel economy if you get a standard 2-liter when that battery dies, because you're lugging around that big heavy battery. But I do like the all-electric range on the 4xE. Mm. That's a nice feature.
All right, how about another one? I'm just going to toss out cars. You guys decide.
Okay.
Mercedes-Benz. Can you guess?
What?
GLB.
Yeah, not super efficient for what it is. It's kind of a box.
It's a three-row small crossover. If you want a three-row crossover, it's got the only downside of that car is it's got a dual clutch, which I'm not in love with. But it's going to be one of the most fuel-efficient three-row cars you can buy.
And actually, I drove one not too long ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
I was really surprised.
I was not expecting that.
I wasn't too impressed with the fuel economy we were getting. I would... Actually, if you want a luxury SUV with hybrid capability, I would definitely take a look at the X5 plug-in hybrid. The new one's got a lot of electric range for what it is, and now has the 6-cylinder engine. So the old plug-in hybrid X5 had the 4, the new one has the 6, and it's really good.
The 45E, correct?
All right. I'm going to throw another one, okay? You ready?
All right.
I'm on a roll now.
Go.
All right. Chevy.
No.
Tahoe. With the Z71 with the straight 6. Diesel.
Oh.
Okay.
They just put that into it.
In the Z71 too?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Okay, yeah, that's...
I said no right away because I couldn't think of a Chevy SUV that gets good fuel economy. No, that's a pretty good...
It's a great diesel engine.
Yeah, it's...
Nice and torquey.
Diesel's expensive now, unfortunately. That's a downside. But but for a big, real three-row, right, where you can actually haul, all right?
Diesel's very expensive.
How about, here's another one.
Okay.
All right. Here's another one that you should consider. Toyota.
Yep.
Sienna Hybrid.
Yes, fantastic. It's just not a huge amount of fun, but it's a great car.
Fuel efficient.
Very fuel efficient. Yeah, it's a great one. So I will now throw out a couple because I think we're going off the deep end here a little bit.
All right,
with the Sienna.
All
right.
I think we need to talk about some fun cars that are not brand new and expensive. Cars in the used market, which are fun to drive and can also be...
Okay, yeah, let's go for it.
All right, so I would pitch to you the first generation Honda Insight. Ours was...
Ouch.
No, hold up.
Our battery cost more to replace than the value of the car.
It was only like $1,500 to replace the battery.
And the car was worth like $1,500.
Because we bought a bad one. Now, the first gen Honda Insight, manual transmission.
Now, for all of you who can't picture this, right, it looks a little bit like a cockroach. Let's be honest.
It's a doorstop.
It's got these skirted, rear wheels.
This car was some of the most space-age technology that Honda's ever done, though. It was fully aluminum, built in the same plant as the S2000. Can I finish? It's got a manual transmission. And ours was totally clapped out. It was completely at the end of its life.
I completely agree with you, Tommy.
And it got, what kind of fuel economy do you think?
Incredible. I completely agree with you.
60 mpg.
Except ours smelled like cat pee, and I could never get that out of my brain. So to me, that car will forever smell like cat piss. And so I can't get past how bad ours was.
Well, don't buy one that smells like cat pee. But they're fantastic cars. A lot of fun.
I just can't get past it. Yeah, it was just horrible. Horrible.
Well, But you have to,
I know,
as a journalist, take the cat pee out of the equation.
I just can't. I just, every time I think of that car,
you're traumatized by it.
Yeah, that stench comes wafting into my nose, and that's all I could think of.
Three cylinder, by the way, little interesting engine. It's got this clean burn mode too, which goes.
I'd say, if you're gonna do that, just get the first gen Prius.
No, because the first gen Prius is very.
It has rear seats. How about that?
But it's very boring.
But it has rear seats.
Yeah, and also not nearly as fuel efficient. First-gen Priuses do like 40. Insights do like 60.
The problem with all those is they're all so clapped out. They all got driven zillions of miles.
Now, I do like the first-gen Prius. I think it's a good option, but you can't find them. Like you said, they're clapped out. But they are also pretty cool.
All right. How about a Mercedes-Benz 124? Or is it 123 diesel?
Yeah, they're not really that efficient. Mm-hmm. Mine was not very efficient.
And they're smoky.
Well, what people do with the old diesel Mercedes is they run them on SVO, straight veggie oil, which requires a little bit of a conversion because you have to put a tank heater in for when it's cold.
And if you want the wagon, they're expensive.
Well, the biggest issue is if you really want to save money, you have to run it on straight veggie oil, in which case you can run it for practically free. But then you have to make your own veggie oil, and that is one of the nastiest, dirtiest, smelliest, grossest processes of anything in the automotive world.
Yeah, people think you just go to a restaurant and get the old fryer.
Well, you do, but then you have to filter it and filter it and filter it in your garage and drums, and it gets everywhere. You have to do it through jeans, and it's
you're gonna get oil stained clothes.
Horribly gross.
Yeah,
really gross.
But
stuff.
Tommy, you mentioned a good point with the old Honda Insight.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hondas, hybrids, and manuals, there is another one.
Yeah, the CRZ.
There
that's
it is.
A fun one.
Yeah, the Honda CRZ.
A little bit of an identity crisis in the CRZ. This was that two-seater sports car.
Once again, no rear seat. You know, I got a rear seat in Europe. And for some unfathomable reason, they pulled it out of the American. So if you get the American version, there are like these two indentations.
Let's say do not sit.
Yeah, where there should be a seat. But for some reason, they decided in America, we'll make it less sellable.
So other good options, Case is going to hate me for saying this, our videographer, but first-gen Volts are pretty cool. I really do like the first-gen Chevy Volt.
They were good.
They were really good, yeah.
I love the first-gen Volt. Actually, I love the second-gen Volt, too.
Second-gen wasn't as wacky, though. First-gen was
first
kind
gens
of a little
are
weirder.
Cooler. Yeah, I
it was,
agree.
No, it was a really solid car.
Really solid car.
Once again, no three-passenger rear seat. I think that hurt it a lot. It's a four-seater.
I would pitch you some interesting options.
Yeah, the ELR.
ELR.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically the Cadillac version of that.
If you were really
like
on a budget. $50,000
more.
Those, you know, those for a long time were like $24,000. They were $85,000 new.
Exactly.
And they dropped to like mid-20s for the longest time. I always wanted one. It was my kind of guilty pleasure in that red color. But I have yet to see what they're recently doing. But they were, like I say, they were like $25,000.
Any of the Dieselgate cars, by the way? The mid-2000s Volkswagens?
If they're fixed.
They are very, very fuel efficient and they have good power.
So that includes Volkswagen, Audis, right?
Well, I'm thinking primarily
Porsche,
like
they all have that 3-liter diesel.
Golfs, the Alltrack Golfs, Jettas, the smaller ones are
Golf, Porsche Cayenne hybrid. It's a diesel.
Golf,
and it's a,
Porsche Cayenne.
No, sorry, Porsche Cayenne hybrid diesel.
Did they do a hybrid diesel?
I think they did a hybrid diesel. Was it diesel was hybrid or was it a, was
I think
it a
the gas one was hybrid.
Hybrid. Anyway, the Cayenne hybrid.
I don't like that 3-liter diesel very much.
Okay.
Not really my thing. I would be willing to put out a couple others.
Yeah, what do you got?
The Geo Metro. 90s Geo Metro.
You said it, everyone. You just said it.
Three cylinders, based on the Suzuki Swift. Very reliable. I was just looking at the fuel economy ratings.
Just get a Samurai, a Samurai or a Tracker.
No,
at that
they're
point.
Not efficient. Geo Metros, if you get the fuel efficient one, which I think was the XFI, they'll do like 50 mpg. For real. Yeah, cool.
And
other
if,
one.
If a wind blows on it, it'll like
tip, it'll just tip over.
Yeah, but they're very cheap. And if you
I think
need,
they weigh like 200 pounds.
If you need a dirt cheap car to get you to work.
Who's going to find a Geo Metro? God.
They're around. They built a ton of them.
I haven't seen a Geo Metro in years.
Yeah, they're gone.
I just
they
saw six of them at the junkyard. They
Yeah, aside from the junkyard.
But that's where I got the idea, the Geo Metro. They're really good cars, actually.
And you could buy six for like 20 bucks.
Well, you see, the Geo Metro is one of these cars that's the butt of every joke, as we're proving. But for folks that have a small amount of money and need a good, solid, reliable car to get them to places, the Geo Metro, honestly, not a bad option.
At that point, just buy yourself like
available
a Chinese scooter.
Available at your local junkyard.
No, I'm serious. Like, I'm genuinely serious. There's a lot of people that just need a few seats.
A scooter.
They need a few seats, and they need a family. They have a family they need to get to the places. The Geo Metro. Like, this is genuine consumer advice.
Surprised you guys are giving me more crap about my Golf Porsche.
So I would definitely consider... Definitely consider Geo Metro. A lot of those cars from the 80s, actually, like the CRX HF, also in the 50 mpg range, if you can find one. Those are really, really good cars. The reason that these cars were so efficient is not because they use advanced technologies, but they were just so incredibly lightweight.
So, like, there was my friend Steve had a Civic HF, right?
Yeah, once again, there you go, great option.
The problem with that car was the way that they got to fuel efficiency in the 80s.
But by stripping everything out of them.
And by taking the horsepower out of them.
Yeah.
They were anemic.
Sure.
Right? No fun. Just.
But they're kind of fun now. Now that we're 40 years into it, I think they kind of have a charm to them and there's a lot of fun surrounding them.
How about if somebody wants a modern car that, you know, is going to also protect their family with, you know, the latest or at least as close to it. Let's go back, like, you know, not 30 years, but let's go back like 10 years.
I would pitch to you the Rabbit Diesel from the...
Now you've gone back 40 years.
Early 1980s. No. I think a good one from the recent history is the Lexus CT200H.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
This is a little hatchback wagon.
I think they just discontinued in Japan.
Oh,
like,
did they?
Like very, very recently.
That is, I think
it's,
that is...
It stuck around for a while.
If I were to pick one car I would recommend out of all these, you just nailed that one.
A little boring to drive though.
But it's incredibly fuel efficient and they're pretty unique and they're pretty cool and they're, you know, Toyota's underneath, so they're going to run forever. And, you know, they're using Toyota Synergy Drive. It's a really good little car.
I would also pitch to you the BMW i3. Used i3s are, they're getting more expensive actually. They were like 15 and now they're like 25. But fantastically engineered cars. Volkswagen e-Golf.
Yeah, how about any of those? Yeah, compliance cars.
All of them are really pretty good, especially if they're still in battery warranty. I wouldn't get an old Leaf because those had air-cooled batteries and they do fail. But i3s, very few battery failures. e-Golfs, very good.
I would only get the ones with the range extender. The problem is with those compliance cars, now that we're into the more, let's say call it the electric car 2.0, right, where once you get used to having an electric car that has over 200 miles of range, it's really hard because we've had the Smart EV, we've had the Spark EV. It's really hard to go to an electric car that has like officially 70 or 80 miles of range, but unofficially when it's cold, like 50. It's just not.
It's just because you're spoiled is the word.
No, it's not. No, it's just not usable.
I thought it was easy. I mean, just for cruising around town.
Oh, it's miserable.
70 miles of range is all you need.
Yeah.
Spark EV, lovely car. I truly loved it. I never once had range anxiety. It got me everywhere I needed to go.
I think for a city car, you need at least 100 miles. Like we've proven with the Mini SE, at least 100, and ideally more than that. But yeah, so first generation e-Golfs had 80, useless. The second version had like 120, 25 if I remember right. So those are actually pretty usable. But once again, they're because everybody wants electric cars, they were like, they for a long time you could buy them. They were like 35,000, but the dealers were discounting them, so you can get them for like 25. Now they're still 25 or more.
I think e-Golfs are great. I think Spark EVs are great. I think Fiat 500Es are really, really fun. Ugh. Also really good cars.
Not enough range.
Well, that's your opinion.
Yeah. How about like, not the Ioniq 5, but how about like the Ioniq?
Yeah, good cars. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Very good. Yeah, lots of good used options.
The Focus EV?
No.
No?
Didn't like that one very much, actually. One of the few compliance cars that didn't think worked very well.
Okay. Well, wasn't there a Fusion EV as well?
No, that was a Fusion
the Energy.
Energy,
that's
plug-in
right.
Hybrid. Yeah.
The Max, that was another.
C-Max.
C-Max Energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of plug-in hybrids.
Actually, the C-Max Energy may not be a bad one. That's a hybrid, and I'm sure those things have, you know, not appreciated over the years, but they are very roomy, and, you know, that's the one you probably really want instead of the Metro, because it's going to get better fuel economy than the Metro, because it is a hybrid, and it's probably kind of under the radar right now for most people.
The
C-Max. The Metro. The Geo Metro,
yeah.
No, then I'm talking about, like, if you have $3,000 to spend on a car, get a Geo Metro.
Get a motorcycle.
Yeah, but people have to... I'm serious. People have to go to work and they have to go through winter.
I'm absolutely serious. Get a motorcycle at that
with
point.
With a sidecar.
Look at this look he's giving me. What's that look?
Yeah, because
I'm not making fun of you. I'm honestly saying...
It's unrealistic. There's plenty of families out there, Dad, that have a small amount of money and they have to take their kids to school.
Don't
the Geo Metro is an option
there.
No,
it's not. It's dangerous and it's going to fail and it's going to break and it's going to make their life miserable.
I really think...
So I was kind of flippant. I said, get it, but I would not recommend that car. Good God.
But, Dad, at some point, I mean...
There are much better cars for $3,000.
Not in this market is my point, especially if you want fuel efficiency.
First of all, you're not going to find a Geo Metro.
Well, you can. They're out there. That's not true. They built a ton of them. Other one like that, Toyota Echo. You know,
sure.
Very reliable.
Okay.
Tercel's very reliable.
Very good.
How about
like, Toyota Yaris, same thing.
How about a Scion IQ?
Not Scion, the Toyota.
What's the Toyota IQ? What was that one?
The Scion IQ is a little smart car thing.
It was a 3-seater.
Yeah, don't get that.
You want affordable and cheap?
Because they're not affordable. I was just shopping for them. They're like,
what were those 3-seater Toyotas?
The Scion
IQ.
That was the Scion IQ.
Yeah. But I wouldn't get one because they're not that cheap. They're like 10 grand plus in this market. I would consider Toyota Yaris also a great.
Look, here's the problem, Tommy. I understand you're trying to give good advice to people, right?
Yeah.
The problem is when you get into that like $3,000 range and you want fuel efficient, you're going so far back that the cars become, in my mind, dangerous, right? They will fold around you in an accident like an accordion. And then if they don't fold around you because they're so old and because the technology is so bad, you will probably have a total of 2.3 hours before the brakes go or before the carburetor goes. You know, I wouldn't even look
at
those
cars. But here's the issue, Dad. I mean, I would have agreed with you 2 years ago. But the market is so insane. Finding any running and driving car now that's going to be reliable for $3,000.
So at that point, look, if you want to have that, I'll be happy to have that conversation, right?
Yeah.
So you can get, you may not get fuel efficient cars, right? But you can get cars that are safe and are inexpensive and are long lived, and you don't have to go down the Geo Metro route. The perfect example of that would be your Jeep Grand Cherokee that Nathan's now driving.
Sure, But once again, the issue
is
they're so unfuel efficient where they're not in the reach for some folks.
How much is a day in the hospital going to cost you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's more than one day.
And the Jeep is, you know, it's got other upsides, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be reliable, though. A $3,000 4.7 or straight six is.
An old Grand Cherokee will be cheap to fix. Right, the parts, you can go to any advanced auto, get parts for them.
If this is your only car, I couldn't recommend
it. It also has all wheel drive. So it's good in the winter?
I couldn't recommend a Grand Cherokee for an only car. I don't trust reliability.
I trust them.
I would, if you're going to get a car that from that era, go Japanese. It's got to be that roundy era Camry, or it's got to be the
Accord. That's all-wheel drive.
I'm saying, but if you're, at some point, the budget is so low,
I mean, if
where the maintenance cost is going to be more important than the all-wheel drive.
If you want to go like Japanese, then do 4Runner.
Too expensive.
But I'm saying compared to the... Right, that's the problem, right? Because the Japanese cars, because they have a reputation for being reliable, are going to be double the cost. Like,
but are well-deserved.
The 4Runner and a Grand Cherokee, right, are probably very similar in what they do and how they approach the world, but the Grand Cherokee is going to be half the cost.
A well-deserved reputation.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not well-deserved.
And I'm saying if you have $3,000 to spend, you're not going to get a good Grand Cherokee that's going to treat you well. It just won't happen. Because, I mean, if you get a ZJ, you have automatic transmission issues. If you get a newer one, you might be able to get the straight six.
But a buzzkill here.
I just want to be realistic.
I think you will find a good ZJ.
ZJs have the horrible transmissions that are made out of glass.
All right, so let's if we're going down this road, let's actually give some useful consumer advice instead of arguing. So first of all, I disagree. I think you can find an old Jeep Grand Cherokee that will be reliable. Here is what you have to look for, okay? When you're out there, because you go to Craigslist in Denver, put in Grand Cherokee, you're going to get 3,000 of those things, right?
Yeah.
Now you got to find the right one. Right, you got to find the single owner one, and the price difference between a single owner and one that's been kicked around between the auction sites is going to be negligible. It's going to be negligible. So find the single owner one. Find the guy who you like or gal who's got all the receipts for it. Right, find the one that's been driven to work or cross country, and those do exist. So then it becomes about finding the right variant of the car. You're arguing, you're saying that every ZJ is going to have transmission problems. I'm saying, yes, every car is going to have issues at some point, and we know what those failure points are because they've built a lot of them. But because they've built a lot of them, because there are a lot of them out there, you can find ones that have been taken care of that haven't been subject to deferred maintenance that will be reliable, and they will cost the exact same amount that the crappy ones that will have those problems. Now you just have to be smart and you have to do your homework and you have to find the right car.
I was just talking to Toby, our mechanic, about this because he deals in a lot of these affordable cars. And he said in this market, finding a running and driving car that will be reliable for $3,000 is very tricky.
I'm not saying it's not tricky.
And I think that you are much more likely to have better luck with longevity on a Toyota product, a Nissan product from that era, than a Jeep. I'm putting that out there.
So look, there's certain cars that just have like a second life that are going to be expensive. So a 4Runner in Colorado is one of those cars, right? Sure. People want them to go off-roading. So if they have, you know, a regular car and then they need to go and go bash something out, they're going to get a 4Runner. But you're right, there are like cars that don't have that second life. Another example of that might be to a less extent an Xterra. Xterras have very similar, but they don't necessarily are as sought after by people who go off-roading. If you want to go further downfield, go with a Pathfinder.
Sure.
Right? Same thing, right? They're not, and they're going to be a little bit less desirable because not as many people are looking for them.
So, for example, I'm all about cheap Jeeps. I think they're great. But if it's your only car, you have to rely on every day to get you to... Because I have a real-world example of this. We bought what we thought was a good Grand Cherokee. It was $2,500. And it had a lot of good things going for it. It was rust-free, clean interior. It had some service history to it. No head gasket issues with that 4.7. And it still needed a $2,000 transmission rebuilt.
Yeah, I agree. But also, Tommy, you know, I said be smart about it. And when I bought that vehicle, which I did, right, I bought that, I was running into a pretty serious deadline in terms of video production. So I would have walked from that car.
But even if you didn't have that deadline in this market,
I would have walked.
In this market, finding a WJ Grand Cherokee that's one owner for $3,000 is just not very realistic. It just isn't.
You got, like I say, you know, most people probably, the people who probably are shopping for cars in that price bracket,
right,
you know, are probably people who have their back against the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're driving to work and all of a sudden your car like explodes or something, right? And you need a car to get to work. And so you go to your local used car lot, right? And the guy talks you into buying
whatever.
And it's going to be a guy for the most part into something, and that car is going to be from the auction and it's going to have issues, right? So this advice I'm giving you is grand if you have the time and the and the ability to actually put the work in.
And that's
a lot of work.
And that's why I'm saying if you are up against a wall, just buy a Toyota.
Right.
Just buy a Camry. Buy an Echo. Buy a Yaris. Buy something that has a proven reliability record.
Right. For an example, I'm just looking at old Yaris prices. Mm-hmm. You can get a 2009 Yaris two-door.
Yeah.
For just under $11,000.
For an 09 Yaris?
09 Yaris.
You got to go older. You got to go like
That's 47,000 miles.
Yeah, that's
Before I do Yaris, it's a weird car. I do a Corolla.
Yeah, a Corolla.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do a Corolla.
You can never go wrong with a Corolla.
I'm just making the point that if you need an affordable, reliable car with good fuel economy to get you places, get a Corolla, get an old Camry.
Well, we've certainly gone far afield, guys, from our original, area we started. But I think it's relevant because right now, you know, our economy is changing. I think people are feeling a lot of pain out there, not just in gas prices, but with inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of stuff isn't out there. So you know, I think we had a conversation for everybody in this podcast. So, you know, from people looking for $3,000 cars all the way to the people who are out there buying $50,000 allocation GT4 RSs. And hopefully it was not just educational, but fun.
Yeah, and let us know what you think in the comments below.
Yep, thanks for watching. See you guys next time. Ciao.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.